Gail, you want to do the honors? Ben Sora and Mora?
Ben Sora and Mora, my name is Ben Sora and Mora. We should yell these two sides. So actually, you have to accept the path. Go, Elliot. I should do the hum and blush on the key. I should have my Kiela ish pen. Ben, the little bass, Ben, the little ish. Hunter, should have a little while upon this.
Okay. So the focus of this Mishnah is obviously on this man of Ben Sora Mora, not so much on the substance that comes later in the Perek. But we begin with the Geder in terms of the Zman. Okay, so what can we glean in terms of the Zman from the Mishnah, Sariel? What's the beginning time point? Mishayavi Shte Sairos, right? Three words. Mishayavi Shte Sairos. What's the end point? Okay, so we don't know exactly how that long that is from the Mishnah. We'll see Rashi in a little bit. And then we have some dinim in the seif of the Mishnah. Kiel ish bein. So we say ben velo bas. We'll discuss that next week. Ben velo ish. Okay. And then we have this statement, which is, for us, surprising. Katan pater shelo ba l'chlal mitzvos. So he's not an ish, but it can't be a katan. So we thought what was a straightforward halacha of mishiyavi shtei sairos ad shiyakif's kanatachton, the seifa seems to complicate the resha. That's what the Gemara wants to deal with, and Tosos deals with. But even before we get there, what's, Sariel, surprising about a statement in the Mishnah of Katan Pater Shelo Ba L'chol Mitzvos? Yeah, it's a din b'chol ha-Torah kula. Why is this coming up in a Mishnah at the beginning of the 8th parak of Sanhedrin? Why would you think that things would be different here? So let's take a look at Rashi on the Mishnah. Right, so we just turn back. The previous perek, okay, is Arba Misos, right? So it deals with the dinim of the Niskalin. So Ben Sora Mora gets Skila. That's the worst, okay? So as Rashi is alluding to, the Seifa is elaborating the Resha, right? Shtei Sairos is the geder of a gadol. Katan is lo ba l'chal mitzvos. Ad Yaakov's kan atachton. Sheis kan mukaf seyar, so kulo atachton lo elyon. Right, not in his beard. Which is always an important idea. Shenamar ben velo ish. Oh, so what's the significance of ben velo ish? So mishahikif skan atachton, that would be an ish, okay? Right, even though a ben, you could sort of call somebody zebini, you could be 6 years old, he'd be 4 years old, right? This kind of a diuk is a little bit of a funny diuk for us, because ben simply means a child. Lo matzina lechubei mekami shiavishtei sairos, why? Ah, okay. Hilkach. Who? Okay, so it can't be a katan, even though the term ben.
David X, please come to the office. David X, please come to the main office. Thank you.
Even though the term ben could mean a five-year-old in normal circumstances, but you know, since there's an onesh skila, this is very important, we're talking about an onesh here, so that already limits us to bar mitzvah. So we're going to deal with the earliest period of bar mitzvah, because we want to say ben velo ish, right? And how have we defined the term ish here? According to the Mishnah, ad sheyakif zakan hatachton. Right, that is now crossing over into that territory. So the Gemara immediately jumps, Ariel, on the first point that you raised. Katan minalan de pater. Minalan? Of course. Visu, and more importantly, why in the world would you need a special limud in the eighth parak of Sanhedrin to tell you, oh, we're not going to punish a katan? If you made it this far in the Masechta, right, we hope you understand that. Katan is not a bar onshin. So, anon hochi kaminan. Pause. Let's try to understand this before we go any further in the Gemara. What's the Gemara saying? This is obviously very, very critical.
It's about the eventual progression that this child or young man will end up having, no matter whether he's 12 or 13. It's about we're punishing him as a result when he's 20.
I agree with almost every word you said. But you have to say it's sharper. There's one word that I don't think was consistent with the rest of your comment. Micah?
It's not his chet alone would not be enough to kill him, but since we're already nidol Hashem Sofo, so...
You're dancing around it. You're saying it, but you're not saying it exactly. What's that? It's not a... Instead of saying reaction, it's not a punishment. You guys are all close. You guys are all first. You have to sharpen it. It's not a punishment. Of course, you're right. A katan, we know, b'chol ha'torah kula, can't get a punishment. But guess what? This isn't a punishment. Let's read that again. You'll see it. As a punishment for a sin that he can. Al shem sofo nerag. The whole standard of bar mitzvah, right, Emmanuel, is only a din in onshin. But he doesn't require an onesh. It's similar, Micah, to which halacha that we learned where he said explicitly that a katan is included? Where striking a person down has nothing to do with the punishment. Rodef, thank you. Not a surprise that it ended up in the same parak, right? Person hasn't done anything yet. This is a tremendous tension at the beginning of the parak. The beginning of the parak zeroes in on the issue. I've divided into two different weeks. Where you can really divide the sugya like with a machete. Those who believe that there's an onesh here and those who believe that there's not an onesh here. When you read the Mishnah, you get the impression, right, that this is an onesh. You read Rashi's commentary on the Mishnah. That's the language. Shelo bali chal mitzvos. You read this line in the Gemara, there's no onesh. V'od, now back in the Gemara, again, the Gemara was asking the question, why all of a sudden, if we know b'chol ha'torah kula, katan is pater mina onshin? So the first answer is not an onesh. We talk about a ben sorer v'more. If I just had the Mishnah statement, ben velo ish, I would have assumed that here, we're for some reason making an exception, maybe because it's not a punishment. Ben velo ish, that clause in the Mishnah, those three words in the Mishnah, Ariel, sound like we're talking about a katan. So Amar of Yehuda Amarav, the Amar Kra. So this we have to understand as well. Where exactly is the Gemara applying the din of Rav? And what does it mean, ben hasamach l'gvura social ish? So let's take a look at the Rashis. on the Gemara, then we'll go over to Tosfos. Onshin, Bishar Onshin. We have to know what we're reading. Bishar Onshin. Where in the world do we find an onesh to anash hakasav es hakatan? Here we should require a special pasuk to tell me that, oh, it's not applicable to a child. Ah, to ben sermar al shem cheto nerag. Eitan, as you came around to, right? Diniba ibar onshin, that we would care or not that he should be fitting for a punishment. It's not a punishment. This is a huge, huge, huge topic, right? This is like, you know, the plot line of the Minority Report. Still haven't seen it, right? But the, you know, death, you know, I don't know if they were giving out death, they're just arresting these people, but, you know, mutav shi amazakai v'al yamos chayev. Okay? V'chielish ben sora mora. Get to you in a second, Micah. Okay. So once he becomes an ish, in other words, shtei sairos, so he could be called ben sora mora. So the Balei HaTosfos immediately says, well, wait a second. You talk about Ben. Ben v'loish maybe is a katan mashma. We have precedent. We're not operating on an island. Maybe we should be able to discern something very, very important here. So Sari HaTosfos says, Vim tomar dilma. Aww. We have a whole tchum of halacha. We're on a daraisa level. We actually can dip beneath bar bat mitzvah. Mufla samachlish. I want to talk about that. Why nidarim is very significant. So maybe here too. Maybe we can have our cake and eat it too, right? V'chiyeli ish. Bain does sound not like a gadol. We don't need it to be a gadol because maybe you don't need an onesh altogether. We've already solved that problem. So ben v'lo ish. So why don't we just appeal back to the category that we know already from Seder Nashim. We're in Seder Nezikim. We already learned in Darim. Mufla samach l'ish. Umifarash Rabbeinu Tam. It's not the normal definition of ish, which would just be shtei sairos greida. But it's Lashon Gevura. Here, there's a perception that Ish has a specific and particular significance that would defy any extraction from Nedarim. Shimon? Nice. The Red Hawk strikes again. V'im tomar. So, right. Okay, so if that's really true, so let's just drop this whole discussion about Katan Mamish. So what does he say?
That we would have thought that it could the Rosh Hashanah period could exist a little bit before.
Excellent. And even if it then expands the Shlosha Chadashim, which we'll see is the boundary point.
You wouldn't worry because the 3 month boundary period is only once he's considered Roi Lahola.
Correct. All of the time that he's Bekatnuso, he's not really Roy Laholid, and we don't have a problem with that. Gzeiras Hakasav. Okay. So, in the end, right, Rabbeinu Tam is saying that here, Bain is lafuke gvuraso shalish, but you still had to deal with the possibility that it could have been a little bit earlier. And Nedarim is not going to be like a viable paradigm. Let me just say a word about Nedarim, and then we'll move to the next section of the Makoros. We'll hear from Mike in between. So just one comment about Nedarim. There's a very good reason that we can dip beneath the bar and bat mitzvah line when it comes to the Nedarim. It's a very good reason for that. Why is it about Das? Excellent. It's very similar, if you want to think about it conceptually, to why, when it comes to Ben Sarah Mora, if you would accept that it's not really an Onesh, you could dip beneath Bar Mitzvah. Or for Rodef, you could go beneath Bar Mitzvah. What's the common denominator? Who can figure out the common denominator between the Darim, where you're right, Sariel, it is about Das, Mufla Sam Mukhlish. Micah?
Because you don't have to be 13 to be theologically or rebellious.
Well, let's just stick with the Darim for a second. What's the common denominator between that? It's on?
You're saying like this thing that I can't use, so it's not about you, it's about the other object?
Well, the Darm is always about the Chafza, good. But let's say we're talking about a Shavua for a second. So Shavuos are oriented towards the Gavra. The standard of Bar and Bat Mitzvah is Shayach when the obligation is generated by the Torah. Now you appreciate, Sariel, what I meant when you said, but why is it about Das? So here, when it's from the bottom up, what should the standard be? The person is has Das. Mufla samachlish. That's why we not everybody who's 12 counts, but we ask him a few questions to see if he can really generate. Right? He's auto-generating this Isser Chepza. So it's actually very similar to the logic of Ben Sora or Mora. The Torah can only give somebody an Onesh if they're Bar Mitzvah. In the case of Ben Sora or Mora, the good news is it's not an Onesh, according to this approach in the Gemara. In the case of the Darim, the Torah didn't do it. He did it, or she did it. That's why it's such a compelling paradigm. But in the end, we're not going to dip beneath Bar Mitzvah because, as Rabbeinu Tam notes, Ish here doesn't just mean Bar and Bat Mitzvah, it means Gevuraso Shel Ish. It has a different connotation altogether. Okay, so Micah, please, go ahead. Excellent. Okay, good. Good, good, good. That we will get to when we get to the Chizkuni. Some very important perspectives. He's not entirely innocent. Now the question is, when I use the term Onesh, what's an open question here, Micah, is to what extent can we say that giving somebody a disproportionate punishment should require them to meet standards of punishment? That question, I promise you, could be argued from both directions. Is giving a disproportionate punishment still even really a punishment? Or is it clearly indicative that it's not really a punishment, but as Rashi was alluding to, as we'll see inside in just a moment, Ayin Aleph Amud Beis, Yamazakai, Al Yamaz Chayev, Al Shem Cheto Nerag, Al Shem Sofo Nerag.
It's also often eerily similar to the quote that Rashi Tosfos on saving in terms of growth.
Okay. What is the goal here? Okay. So let's move ahead now, Sariel, to the Mishnah 9 Aleph Amud Beis. Okay, so the beginning of this Mishnah, Ben Soru Mora Nidon Al Shem Sofo, Stam Mishnah, that presents precisely the view. This is the end of the Gemara's treatment of Ben Soru Mora. It's three dapim. Okay, so Samaches Amud Beis, Ayin Aleph Amud Beis. So you have what appears to be unchallenged statement. That's going to be very important. Yamos Zakai Val Yamos Chayev. Micah, right? That left lashon of Yamos Zakai sounds innocent. So when you have this kind of a Stam Mishnah, it would seem, emphasis seem, pretty hopeless to try to make the argument that Ben Soru Mora is a regular Onesh. Rashi, the first comment of Rashi on the Sugya, Ben Soru Mora, Seder Niskal and Tanu Perkin de la'el, Messiahim Hochosav Azul, that we're dealing with the Niskalan. Ben Soru Mora is Niskalan just like all the other Niskalan. So, it would seem like pretty difficult to try to maintain a position that Ben Soru Mora is actually really legitimate Onesh. But, if you take a look at the Gemara that I assigned on top of Ayin Beis Amud Aleph, maybe this Stam Mishnah is not reflective of a consensus omnium. Maybe it's reflective of a particular view. So let's see. So Tandir Rabbi Yossi Haglili Omer, it is Stam Mishnah followed by an assigned Brisa. Okay, that's very important. Okay, so now what we saw, again, like an unchallenged view in the Mishnah, presented in the Brisa in very, very similar terms. Yama Zakai, Yal Yama Schayev, Nidan Al Shem Sofo, Yiyah Tola Sof Daito Shal Ben Soru Mora, all of these things might be indications that this is a perspective, a very important perspective, but maybe not the only point of view. And I ask you to take that seriously because I'm going to try very hard to make the argument next week that a very, very prominent Rishon did not accept this view. Micah.
If we were to take the view of Yamazaga on his five, where it's all about the events or moments and saving him, like Nidon Al Shem Sofo, so what is Hachraza doing here at all?
Okay, good. So Hachraza is a very, Hachraza might lend itself to that view. We'll get back to the Ramban. We're going to see the Ramban we talked about at the beginning of the year. Maybe Dafka, you would be Machriz. I wouldn't say it's a spoiler alert because I know you guys, everybody already saw this, but maybe the whole idea of Achraza is the person doesn't really deserve to die, but it's Liaser Boas Arabim, it's a safe society. I thought what you were going to say is a very important question and give somebody else the opportunity to ask the question now. Avi, were you going to ask this question? if it's really midin yamozakai v'al yamoschayev, so which we should say hadra kushal aduchta on which critically important point? Like, what stubborn fact? Yeah. Why do we need a God, though? Why do we need a God, though? That seems to be very enigmatic. If it's really just about, you see where this is going, it's not really an onesh. Let him die meritorious before he's done all these horrible things. Isn't it bizarre that it seems to match exactly the same starting point? Especially in light of Rabbeinu Tam's observation that when we say ben velo ish, we specifically don't mean bar mitzvah, we mean gvuraso shalish, samach gvuraso shalish. It can't yet be gvuraso shalish. That's what Tosfos said. So in theory, that should be able to extend before bar mitzvah. Why not? So the whole, again, it's like it's a stubborn fact. It won't go away. The whole doctrine of Yom HaZakai V'al Yom HaSchayev, which again is very strongly represented in the Gemara and the Mishnah and the Braisa, that whole doctrine clashes with the idea of Mishiyavish de Sairos Achiyakif Zakan Hatachton. Why should there be a need for a Bar Onchin? So you're going to have a very hard time addressing that issue. Avi then Avishai. Nice. But we really have evidence, though, as Rabbeinu Tam Tosfos point out, that Das starts a little bit earlier than that. Mufla Samach Lish. That was what they were asking. If you need Das, you can get there. I would also say, in addition to that, we don't need to figure it out. The Torah figured it out. Yard the Torah L'sof Daito. Yeah, I know you wanted to say something. Yeah. An act of mercy. You're doing him a favor. You laugh. What's that?
It's a bit reminiscent of Rashi.
The Gemara itself. Yom HaZakai, Yom HaSchayev. You're just doing it for his own benefit. Lo ula olam. Why should the world have to suffer? Why should he have to, you know, become this ignominious figure? You know, people should remember him fondly. You might see that as an unserious kind of an approach. Like, what do you mean killing somebody could be an act of mercy? You haven't met the doctors from, what do they call it? Death with dignity. So now that assisted suicide, or as I call it, murder, is legal in New Jersey, so you know, I have these, it's amazing, you know, the society's disintegrating before our eyes in all areas, including Shvichus Damim. So you talk to these people, we'll get to Avishai in a second, so you say, you know, like, you're trying to understand how does a person psychologically justify their involvement in murder. You know, these people are sick, they're suffering, you know, whatever it is, it's true, they have to write it like an essay explaining that they really want this. And the truth is that most people really don't want to be killed. my experience. And the doctors are like these massive manipulators. And again, we're not talking about, we're talking about a miktsas, a miktsas, a miktsas. And you come to realize in this encounter that this person has convinced themselves that they're truly doing a chesed for the person and for the world. Now, it would be abhorrent to anybody in this room, right? Just because somebody has a terminal illness doesn't mean that you can poison them. You know, you know, they have a whole choreography and they have a very fancy website, and it's and I've told some of you about this. But the point is that in their minds they're saying, Yamosakai vel Yamoschayev. Why should you have to suffer for another 3, 6 months, whatever it is, right? Go out on top. Right? And it'll be great. You'll invite your family and friends over. It'll look so peaceful. They'll want it for themselves. Misas Nashika. So Avi, you know, one man's, you know, death is for somebody else. It's like this merciful act. Yamazakai Vel Yamazchayev. Save this person from all the terrible things that they would have done. They would become a murderer, you know. Avishai.
So as much as a favor, like we think we're doing for this person, we don't, do we necessarily know for sure that he's going to do it? Like by, let's say the case of like Yishmael, where we say like, oh, you can't punish someone for something they haven't done.
Okay. Baruch, so that's what I was saying to Micah, that the Yishmael Gemara is like, seems to be a very profound difficulty for this. Excellent. So that's, in the end, the question is such a powerful question that all of next week we're going to talk about how, in my view, one very, very prominent Rishon couldn't accept this, couldn't accept that the Torah, you know, would be engaging in like a speculative justice. Well, you know, chances are, we don't say chances are in Dine Nefashos. That's not our concept of how justice is supposed to work. If you know anything about Dine Nefashos and Halacha, you'd sooner exonerate 10,000 guilty people than convict one innocent person. You need special majorities, and the whole system is rigged, quite literally, you know, lezakos. So now all of a sudden we're going to be mechayiv. So that's exactly this tension. On the other hand, this is certainly a view. It's not like it can be dismissed as, you know, some esoteric acharon. You know, it's explicit in the Mishnah. It's where the Perek opens with this idea of why would you need, you know, a special limud to tell you that a katan is exempted from this discussion. Well, it's not an onesh. A katan theoretically could have been included. So again, you know, those are going to be the two sort of like poles in the sugya. Is there a possibility of some combination of the two? That's what Micah was getting at. Can Micah say, well, we'll require him to be bar mitzvah so it fits into like the general tzura of onshin, but you really can't say that this is actually an onesh, because it's so disproportionate. Once you like sort of cross that threshold into a bar onshin, can we say, all right, we're going to give a disproportionate onesh, and maybe in that respect, you know, yom b'sakai v'al yom b'schayv, is there some synthesis there? And I want to explore that possibility as well. Okay, so Saria, let's take a look at least at the psukim here. Okay, so there's the hachraza, and we'll go through one by one. So let's just like try to take a pretty big step back here, and let's talk about what the issues are as the Chumash presents them with this ben with this son, ben velobas. So what are the problems with this young man? We'll call him a young man because that term in English is, you know, it's pretty good at a translation. Samach l'gvuraso shalish. So there are a couple of different issues here that the Torah presents. And if you read the psukim 100 times, you could walk away with different impressions each time as to like what the fundamental problem is. Micah, let's pick one. Start with what jumps out at you. Right, so that's a very big factor here. There's no doubt about it. And it's referenced multiple times. He doesn't listen to his father and mother. So they discipline him. They try to teach him. And then it's repeated. So if I stopped here, I would say that whether or not it's an onesh, it has a lot to do with like a deficiency of kibud avim, right? Okay. And continuing on, v'saf suvo aviv v'imo, again, like just this real strong emphasis, the psukim, aviv v'imo. So it could have just said v'saf suvo, but aviv v'imo, bedavka, v'otzio so ziknei ro, v'ol shar mekoro. V'yamru al ziknei ro, b'neinu zes sorer umore, einenu shomea b'koleinu. Again. So we're almost at the end of the paragraph. And everything, I think, we have to define sorer umore a little bit better, but it would appear that everything, Micah, centers on your hayara, that this is a rebellious young man, a mamre, a sorer, an einenu shomea b'kol aviv v'kol imo. And here is the rub, zolel v'sove. This is a very difficult way of concluding this section. Why? Micah, how did you interpret that? Just because... Everybody struggled with this one. The Ramban struggled mightily with this one. Waymek Davar struggled. Everybody, the Ibn Ezra. What's the tension here? Yes, very good. So on its face, it seems to be all of a sudden, right before they kill the guy, they throw out a new charge that we haven't heard about, right? That's not the way a trial is supposed to work. You can ask your father, right? The trial is supposed to be about something. And like on the last day of the trial, it's not supposed to become about something else, right? All of a sudden, there's this total curveball, right? We veer off path. All of a sudden, the gluttonous, drunken, hedonistic question comes up. So is this really a separate? It sounds separate and distinct, but is that possible? Or is that, so to speak, somehow, like, from the beginning now, the mafreya, now we have to go back and see that really the whole time, v'einenu shomea b'kol aviv b'kol imo was really in this area of life. I don't know, maybe when it comes to returning his library books, you don't even need to ask him. He's always first. You know, maybe when it comes to doing the laundry and brushing his teeth, flossing, he's number one. Stealing the afikoman. I don't know if that's such a good example, because stealing is part of this, but the point is Zolo Vasove really like the undercurrent the whole way through? Or, like Mikey, you said, and I agree with you, you know, on its face, it sounds like it's coming out of nowhere. Emmanuel.
I think it seemed like what Mikey was saying, because I think originally he wouldn't be considered a Ben Soramar just because he's like deficient in Kibab Aim, but once he goes the extra step and actually does an active thing, it's like, and is rebellious in a certain way, then that's what kind of takes him from being just deficient in
Kibab Aim to being an active person. So let me ask you a question. I don't disagree with that, Chase, but I ask this with an absolutely genuine sense of curiosity. Why is it worse to be rebellious when it comes to gluttonous behavior than it is to be rebellious about anything else. So let's say it wasn't Zolel Vesoved. Let's say it was his library books. I don't know. Let's say, you know, he was like really, you know, destructive of property. Right? Let's say every time the parents got up, you know, a different lamp was broken, or he would break the windows or something like that. Why is that more of a problem? If you lock the kid in his room with, and you know, obviously he's got this barbecue fired up in there, and you know, he's I don't know, got, you know, bottles, you know, from the floor to the ceiling, you know, presumably many video games also, but you know, he's not you know, out there in the community. Yeah, the hachraza issue. Yeah. Okay. Okay, good. I think there are answers to that, but I was just very, very curious about this, because a lot of the Rishonim struggled to make, I think, that exact point. Like, why is this worse? And maybe we do it at some point, as we'll see, throw up our hands and say, oh, it's like Xeris HaKasa. It's just, we don't know. There might be something to that in the Rambam's approach. Just to get it right out of time. So, try to get everybody in. Sariel, Micah, and Avi, if possible. Otherwise, we'll...
that there's a specific action that's beyond the scope of the Surah of the Torah, but that really is level versus the Torah.
Oh, okay, so we're going to appreciate that in a much deeper level. I agree, and I'll just, let me just whet your appetite by making one comment. Isn't it interesting, because we had the whole discussion today of how much of it is really an onesh, wouldn't it be interesting if it was a non-onesh for a non-sin? Like Kedoshim Tiyu, is the whole point is Kadesh Atzmecha B'Mutzer Lecha, but that's a death penalty. Now it's getting even deeper, right? It's a good thing that you didn't just leave after ninth grade and declare for the NBA draft. Yeah. Ah, very good. Okay, yeah. You know, that happens in CABC all the time. People want to go to the draft early, you know. They figure they could just make more money that way, you know.
So it's not like kind of taken away from the parents over here. Like the parents are the ones who are rebuking him, bringing him to the shower here. They want this to be about the kid. They want the kid to actually be not just in relation to one thing. He's just like going against authority over here. He wants the kid to actually be like a degenerate person.
Okay, so I'm just, again, I say to you what I say to Emmanuel. Is somebody who's a Zolo Vesove a degenerate? I appreciate your use of that term. When I was a kid, that was a very popular term. Is he more of a degenerate than somebody who goes around smashing windows?
I'd say yes, because it seems like he's materialistic. All he's thinking about is what he can get for like himself. All he's doing is...
Let's say he was one of these kids who had a BB gun and he started sniping squirrels from people's roofs. He's less of a degenerate, he's more of a degenerate... Ah, okay. I was trying to push you into that, right? You know, like when the mental health people are like, they're trying to identify, you know, the next, it's not a joke, you know, like the next school shooter, like they don't ask how many, you know, times has the guy been to Noah's Ark this month. They say, like, you know, they ask, you know, is he shooting squirrels from the roof? Seriously. I've had to fill out these questionnaires, not for myself, but, you know, if they think that there's trouble around the corner, so I can tell you, you know, what they're asking, because they see that as highly degenerate behavior and very indicative of, you know, the idea that this person could turn into a murderer and and the like. So, you know, these are very difficult questions, and we'll come back tomorrow. We'll learn all the Midrashi Halacha that I think are really relevant here, and then. We'll get into the approaches of the Rishonim, and especially the Ramban, who I think really openly struggled with this issue of how does Zolo Vesove, when you're supposed to be doing in litigation the concluding argument, you're supposed to summarize what you said, not start throwing out new charges, right? So that's the very big conundrum over here. Okay, very good. Let's hold it up, and then we'll pick it up tomorrow.